Hey, good morning, afternoon, evening, whatever it is. This is the Dr. Zero Trust Show podcast thing that I do weekly-ish. If you're here, I'm lucky because I've got a big time guest on, Godard Abel from G2. He's the man running things, and unfortunately for him, he's going to get peppered with some questions about cyber. So for those for those of you that are out there, yeah, buckle up.
Yeah, no, great to be with you, Chase. Although I have to admit, I don't know that much about cyber. That's why we hired you. But I'll do my best.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see where it lines up from there. Because the first question I kind of want to ask, we'll get into the Splunk acquisition because that's a big deal. And actually, the one thing I want people to walk away from this at the end is, like, when you put stuff into G2, people, we're not sitting around at G2 and like taking your stuff and streaming it out to the vendors and saying, Ricky said you have crappy software. It's anonymous. You're putting your information in there. All the stuff goes through to vet those reviews, and you're helping the community. But for security people like myself, because we're tinfoil hat weirdos, we don't like to share anything. And a lot of people have got this perspective too, that if you review something, you're somehow letting the adversary, the bad guys, know what your configurations are, which is kind of bad OPSEC. But that's not the case, right? G2 keeps that information and uses it for analytics purposes.
No, I think you're right, Chase. I think it's really up to the user. And we do recognize in security, most people can do what we call an unattributed review, which means on the back end, we can vet that you're a real person, which we do for the trust, the authenticity of G2 reviews. But yeah, there's no way for the vendors or other people, security practitioners just browsing to learn more. It's all anonymous to them. And then I think also with AI now, we're just trying to find the themes. Yeah, because hopefully we had hundreds, thousands of reviews of different security solutions. And then we can find the themes with the AI. And the vendors can learn from the themes, which I think is good for everybody. But yeah, we won't share your individual identity because we certainly don't want to make it easier, for the bad guys to figure out what you're running.
So there you have it. Like, let's just bury that one for the CEO of the company is telling all of us tinfoil hat weirdos out there that, like, look, we're not promoting your information out there. No one's getting your configuration data. You're helping the community by reviewing software and actually letting people know I got value out of this, the ROI. I personally love the ROI stuff because from a security practitioner's perspective, how fast can I get something to provide value based on an investment?
True.
And we buy all kinds of cool stuff in security,
True.
but whether or not it yields return on that money is a whole different story.
True. And it is honestly hard for CEOs like me, CFOs, to understand because most of us, we're not deep in your world, right? And we all know security is important. We have to invest in it, but we don't know what, right? So I think you're right. Learning about ROI from real practitioners and I think is super helpful. And certainly, I think also to like I said, executives like myself, so that we can better make security investment decisions.
So from the CEO's perspective, if we take a step kind of tangential to the data analytics side at G2, like as a CEO, what is your perspective just general on cybersecurity? Is it we invest in it and we're going to run it to ground, or is it we're going to kind of let security build around the company as the company evolves? Like, how with everybody having all the issues they have and you're running the company, how do you view cybersecurity?
And I do think it's evolutionary. I know enough to know we're never done. I think no company ever is, right? Because the threats keep evolving. And also, I've always been a startup entrepreneur. I mean, I started G2 day zero, and there were just five of us. And frankly, at the beginning, most startups, honestly, you don't have a lot of investment security, right? And you're not even that aware of it. But then as the company gets bigger and bigger, and like G2, we've become a unicorn now. We've raised $257 million in capital. And all of a sudden, there's also a lot at stake. For a company like G2. And also, as you have more success, I think sadly, as we all know, you become more of a target. Yeah, because everyone can see, okay, you have more money.
News coverage is just like painting a giant target on you.
True. Like from a security standpoint, it's horrible. It's
It's
great for
bad.
everything else. Like
Bad
we want to.
marketing is bad for cyber. I mean,
True. Yeah. And it's good because we want to attract talent, we want to attract customers. So it's good for all that. But yeah, you also attract the bad guys, right? So I think now, and I think we did, as we've hired Michael Quirk as our director of InfoSec. And I think he's a pretty seasoned
Yeah, he's
practitioner.
basically the CISO.
He is a CISO at G2, and he was hired by, and I think like any startup, at some point you have to mature your whole leadership team. So I started by hiring Sarah Rossio. And I think, as she's our chief product R&D officer. And then I think one of the first things she said to me, Godard, we got to get more serious about security. And so she said she hired Michael. She's like, hey, we need a seasoned practitioner. And I do think You know, Michael, as far as I can tell, he's great. You know, he's been doing this stuff for over 20 years. And he's also kind of adds that grumpy element you need inside the company, you know, because an entrepreneur, and even like so far, they haven't let us turn on Bard, uh-huh. which I find frustrating. But they're like, also now we have a real, also we hired a real general counsel, Eunice Bueller. And I think, so we've kind of grown up as a company now, you know, that we have about 650 employees. Like, so I think like most companies we've grown up, and a big part of growing up is getting more serious about security across the board. And also G2, we aim to be, as you know, the trusted place you go for software. And if we're going to be trusted, and you brought it up earlier, like we want you to be able to trust us as a reviewer. So if you're anonymously sharing things about your security, architecture, tooling, A, we have to be able to do our best. And like any company will never be foolproof, but we want to do our darndest to make sure it's as secure as possible, right? Your private user data. But also, you know, our customers will share sensitive PIA information with us. Obviously, and we have all the right legal terms, but we have a real duty as a company to make sure you can trust us and that we're doing, you know, everything we can. And we're not, you also can't ever do everything you can because we don't have infinite security budgets, but that we're doing everything, you know, that's prudent so that, you know, our community can trust us, right? Software buyers, software reviewers, software sellers. So we aren't a trust business. And, you know, and if we ever violate it, it's so hard to win back. So we are, I think, evolutionary, but we're investing more, I'd say, every year. And as the company keeps growing, I'm sure we'll keep investing more.
Yeah, I mean, I was just from the perspective of sort of practitioner coming on and seeing the company, sort of the corporate side of it, a lot of the investment immediately was around like leveraging Okta for SSO and MFA and those types of things. A lot of cloud, a lot of applications. It just seemed when I came on, because I've been at so many companies seeing how their security controls were, that G2 was one of the kind of unique ones where there was a real move towards what it's going to look like 3-5 years from now, okay. Rather than kind of legacy. And then we're going to roll this as we go forward and try and keep it up, which is a really hard thing to do. I mean, if you're, you know, company's 650 employees now and it keeps growing, if you're doing old stuff, trying to adapt to new things, it just doesn't scale. Mm-hmm. And security, that just leaves vulnerabilities. That leaves misconfigurations, low hanging fruit. And I mean, that, you know, that's where you get your rear end bit off because somebody's coming up behind you.
Yeah. And we do like to talk about G2 eating our own dog food, or I like to say drink our own champagne. And obviously we do have an Okta, for example. I mean, they're also, I mean, no surprise, I think everyone knows them as an industry leader, but you know, they also have a solid review. So I think that is one of the first, you know, tools we put in place. And then I think, as you know, over time, it takes time to get all your applications into Okta. But I think that's certainly one of the steps we're driving more and more. And I think we also use, you know, tools like, well, I shouldn't say our tools.
Yeah, we don't say all of them, but there's a few that are there that are being used for configuration management, vulnerability. Like if you, I don't know if this was intentional, it Quirk did it or not, but he did a good job just on looking at kind of the ZT mapping that we do, because a lot of what's put in place aligns with the ZT side.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so I mean, that's, you know, just whether or not that, and I think that there's a takeaway there too for the folks that listen to this is, you don't necessarily have to like sit down and scribble out your ZT strategy. If you just align to the basics and the fundamentals that make the most difference in security and continue the march along that path, you'll get it right.
Okay.
If you just vomit money into the chasm of cyber, it doesn't make a lick of difference. Caesars, MGM, great example, $383 billion for them. And they spent
a crazy story. They were down like a whole weekend.
10 days, $24 million a day lost.
Wow.
And
think about like the brand impact, right? And
all the people stuck there because there were people where the doors wouldn't open. So if you could leave your hotel room and then you went back because it was all, key card, you couldn't get back in. And I mean, this was in all MGM properties in Vegas. And then Caesars got hit. And Caesars coughed up $15 million just to get their stuff back. But, you know, for the security folks, like we know that you get it back, but they've already installed back doors somewhere else. So they're going to resell that access and someone else is going to come get you. And I think I saw that insurance was supposed to cover some of this. I'm willing to eat my left foot when that happens because cyber insurance is a whole other thing. I don't know what your perspective is on that as a leader. Like, insurance is necessary, but cyber insurance is kind of this nebulous, weird thing. Is that how you think about it, or you've not even really rolled into it that much? You just rely on the legal folks to take care of it.
I'm relying more on our team, but it does, for me, it's hard to understand. you know, and it's such a new area. And honestly, I don't think I've learned enough about it. You know, obviously, in some ways, it's appealing because we all know the risks are so high. But yeah, I think to me, it's also unclear, you know, when do they, and like you said, this MGM case, right? Like, do they then actually cover, right? What are all the carve outs? Like, I imagine the details there. Yeah, there's a lot of details that can make it either effective or not, right?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of the war clause in cyber insurance policies? So it just, this is a CEO, folks, first time kind of hearing about this. So there's apparently a transitive property in insurance where Maersk was a good example of this. They got hit by a group that was doing work out of Russia. The place where it occurred was at war with Russia. Mm-hmm. Therefore, by the transitive property of insurance, they didn't have to pay the thing because it was an act of war. So there was a multi-billion-dollar claim, and they paid a total of like $3 million out. Jeez.
That's like the act. I know a lot of insurance has like the act of God clause. Mm-hmm. Actually, one funny story about that is actually we were living in Chicago suburbs, Lake Forest, and there was a big lightning storm, and it struck our chimney. This is what I learned what act of God mean. One of the bricks from our chimney flew in our neighbor's yard, cracked his windshield, and then neighbor came over really upset. He's like, "Hey, you got to cover this." And then I talked to our insurance, and I'm like, "No, I'm sorry, like." Considered an act of God, lightning strike, and but he was never happy with me again. It's like, it's your fault. I'm like, no, this. I think lightning is about as close to act of God as you can get.
That is pretty close to act of God. Yeah, I don't know how much closer you can get. And lightning strike flies brick onto car.
Yeah.
And get paid for it. That's crazy. I think we actually, for the purposes of just the familiarity side of the Splunk thing that was going on, I think this is something that is worth putting out there too. Like you're always looking for data. You're always looking for where you can go get stuff and understand the thing real quickly. Luckily, here, G2, I was able just to go pull some of this and see what's going on. If you haven't seen this, folks, again, it's not behind paywalls, but you can see sort of share price, why it was the $28 billion, which is in cyber, like that is a crazy acquisition amount. Like,
I think not just in cyber.
That's monstrous.
I mean, $28 billion.
Woo!
And I'm just thinking, I think that's about what Salesforce paid for Slack, which probably in SaaS was like the biggest deal ever. So, yeah.
I mean, that is like crazy amount of money. And that was cash deal, not stock, and not, you know, they just coughed over the coffer for that one, which I think Cisco made a smart investment here because they needed something else to come into the market for them. Like their buy for Duo was a good idea.
Right. And they bought AppDynamics. Yeah. Isn't Splunk somewhat in the same world?
Splunk's SIM, I think. I mean, it's really what they don't want to call themselves SIM anymore, but Splunk definitely fits into SIM, even their ratings on G2 and those types of things. So it's analytics and the capabilities to see what's going on in the system. And it does fit in well with the overall spot that Cisco's trying to fill. Because they want to compete with Palo. Mm. You know, Palo and Cisco have been in this knife fight for forever.
Right.
And now there's a $28 billion, you just threw a Bowie knife into the mix.
Wow.
And who's going to run with it? Whether or not the corporate Borg, you know, absorbs that and makes it into a less effective product will be the real thing. Because that's what, I mean, I'm sure you've seen this too, where security happens all the time. You have solid tech and then a bigger company comes along and buys it and they're buying it. And they just kind of slow roll it and it dies on the vine.
Sure.
You know, you probably can't do that with Splunk because it's right. A big company.
And obviously sometimes it goes the other way. Cause I remember my last company that was running Steelbrick, it's acquired by Salesforce and now it's Salesforce CPQ Revenue Cloud. But Salesforce actually did a great job accelerating us. I think that's what we guys hoped for. Cause obviously they had a much larger Salesforce. Yeah, we came in with like 20 reps and then they have thousands of reps. And all of a sudden our product went from like, you know, a few hundred to all of a sudden like 7,000 customers. Mm-hmm. So, and I think, I think Cisco does have a lot of experience. I mean, they've probably done more acquisitions than almost anyone in tech, right? I think they've been doing it like 25 years.
For forever. Yeah.
So I think they have, and like you said, $28 billion is also kind of, even the Cisco CEO, that's not the kind of one you can kind of screw up.
Yeah, you don't let that
die. You got to take it seriously. So I bet they'll, I imagine they'll get some good synergy, right? Like Cisco probably strengthened to go to market.
It'll be interesting to see how that lines up because I have this sort of idea of how those things are going to bolt together because there's so much consolidation going on in the market. But yeah. From the analyst perspective, we'll just have to kind of see where that marching goes and how those two tie together. But because
how do you think it affects Splunk's competitors?
Well, that's the weird thing is if you crawl through the SIM market for the last couple few years, there's been this kind of spike in draw between the two where SIM was super hot for a while, threat intelligence was super hot for a while, then you started seeing small and mid-sized business try to get into there, and that drove it down and it kind of leveled out. And then now you've got this artificial intelligence thing that's coming in where all of a sudden people can leverage the data way better. And that's, I think, what's driving a lot of this renewed interest in those spots. Because these solutions that do really good, like analytics on threat tactics and vectors and all those, they're great for an enterprise that has a SOC and they have people that know how to do that.
Okay.
But all your small businesses, when they have 10 people and they got, you know, Ricky, the network dude, they don't know how to use a SIEM.
Right.
How are they going to use it? But they want that capability. So it's this one was a total like out of left field for me. And I mean, I sit all day just, you know, pounding through the stuff. I never in 100 years would have thought Splunk would go off and get bought by Cisco. Mm-hmm. But that's probably part of their tactic. So throw the market for a little bit of a loop and see what winds up on the far end.
Yeah, but you're saying it still has to kind of shake out. There's no like immediate, because who's Splunk's biggest competitor today, would you say?
QRadar, IBM stuff, Alien Vault, all the folks that do analytics. I mean, really, if you looked at it and you said, is there a kind of free version of it? It'd be Elk, the Elk stack.
Okay.
So you can, there's a lot of companies that have built stacks that are Splunk, and then they'll do similar stuff in Elk, and they'll figure out if they can do the free version instead of the paid.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of those things where features wind up beating function, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But Splunk's now got $28 billion to invest in whatever it wants to invest in. So, and you should be able to ask, like LLMs, you should be able to ask a SIEM to give you an output and then have an answer and solve the problem.
Right. And I think you're right. Companies like Splunk obviously capture tons of data, right, from their customers. And I think anyone has data now, probably more valuable. And I imagine Cisco probably has more AI expertise too to bring to it.
Yeah, I mean, they've got engineers that can do crazy stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how that levels out. I think the stuff going on with this large language modeling fits into the cybersecurity space so well that it's going to just continue to drive things going forward.
Because you can get quicker insights, right?
And you can actually,
like you said, small companies, in some ways, they can use, I don't know if you'd call it a security bot, but you can almost get a virtual security expert, huh?
Well, and that's where, like having sat in a NOC and a SOC, if you need a bunch of what we typically would call, depending on who you're talking to, an L1 or an L3 analyst to do all the Jedi work, this just levels the playing field. Because now a newbie, an intern, can come in and ask the same question that an L3 would do and get the same answer and fix the problem. So LLMs and this AI, which it's not AI, it's just the marketing term.
Right. It's kind of one tool within AI, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what your perspective is, but the issue that I think in security, especially, that's wrong with calling things AI is people think that it's self-aware and it's just solving problems on its own.
Right. It's more like what people GI, right? It's already generalized intelligence, which everyone says it's not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we don't have a self-aware system that's waking up and doing things. You're asking it questions and generating response. I mean,
that's a great tool. I think it seems like short term actually makes the experts better.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because I imagine it's similar in security. If you're already an expert, you can just analyze data, get answers much quicker. But you still need the human, right? It's a great tool for the human as of right now.
Yeah, this is where we fix. In my opinion, this is how the hiring crisis in cybersecurity is fixed, is I can have one person do the work of 10 or 15.
Yeah. And I think it's also like in engineering, like I was talking to our G2 co-founder, CTO Mike Wheeler. He's building RAM on T, but that's the same thing. Like, and he's a coder. He still codes himself. He loves coding. That's why he's in labs. But like, he's like, yeah, he can, you know, his own productivity can go up 5 to 10X. And so I think the best engineers, but it sounds like you're saying same thing for the best security professionals.
Yeah.
They'll just be able to get a lot more done.
Well, and also for the bad guys. So I was actually playing with a thing today. If a lot of the folks on this, if you know what Google Dorks are, are you familiar with Google Dorks?
I'm not.
So Dorks are something security folks use to basically ask Google a really crafted question, and it will vomit back information it shouldn't.
Okay.
Like, I can find passwords and usernames.
It's like a dumb employee, if you will.
Exactly. Yeah.
Kind of hasn't followed the security training.
So now
starts divulging stuff.
Exactly. That's what it is. Yeah. It's a dork, you know.
Yeah.
But now one of the primary sites that people use for dorking has built in GPT API call. So it literally will go in there and say, if you don't know what you want, ask me and I'll craft the query for you. So now as an adversary, you can go leverage that tool and do all kinds. You don't have to know the days of anyone having to know red teaming, hacking, exploit management, all that stuff. it's over. We have totally leveled the playing field. You can wake up tomorrow and start doing exploitation operations.
Right. And even like, I imagine like the phishing is going to get much better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it also used to be like phishing emails. Oh, you can recognize it by like bad grammar. And honestly, if you have a, and we do all this phishing training at G2 as well, right? Everyone tries it. And I, because I heard even the MGM, wasn't that like through a human? Like I heard
it was one of the old bonehead. Yeah.
It was like a really,
it was basic.
But it was like basic phishing, yeah. Right?
Like call them up and go, hey, I'm John, the IT guy. I need the password. Oh, okay. Here it is. And that's it.
Yeah. And most current phishing is so bad. And actually, I always get like, as a CEO, a lot of texts are like, hey, Godard, did you just text me? I'm like, now when they like screenshot the message and I'm like, did you look at the phone number or the URL? Usually it's so obvious that it's bad, but I imagine the phishing is going to get much better.
Yeah. There's one called
AI is going to like, and they'll probably even be able to personalize it much better.
Deep fakes are going to play into that too.
Yes.
I do those all the time.
Yeah. You probably like send a video impersonating my board members, right?
Or with voice.
Yeah. Like it'll sound like them, look like them. So it's going to get much harder.
How do you deal with that as a CEO? Like, how do you, is it a train and educate thing? Is it a cross your fingers and pray it never happens thing? Like,
well, we're definitely, and even myself, right? Because I think, like we were saying earlier, we have had enough business success now, right? We're a unicorn, like where you do get more targeting. So I think we're trying to be more, obviously train all our employees. And I'm also trying to be more aware because like anyone else, I get hundreds of Slacks, text every day. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to like want to just click the link. You know, but also even training myself to slow down.
Take a second. Yeah.
Right. Like, hey, like, does this make sense? Is it coming? And if you're not sure, well, obviously we have our own security hotline. We can report emails, Slacks too. So A, I try to do that myself. And then B, if it's like a text, right? Like go ask somebody. Obviously don't, if anything, I think screenshotting stuff is safe. I hope.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, typically.
Because I will often do that. And I forward it to somebody like, hey, is this really you? Or like Joe, especially in finance, because I think a lot of the phishing, hacking, right? It's all about wire instructions.
Wire instructions.
This, that. And then I also, especially also train our finance team because that's like one of the number one plays people try. Hey, it's Godard. It's me. I need you to wire, you know, 5 million to my friend in Nigeria, right?
Yeah, my rich Nigerian uncle.
Yes. Yeah. Like that's the most obvious one, but they're usually more subtle. So I do, yeah, I try to keep my own awareness and finance, but company wide, right? Because I think MGM teaches these again, like you just have to be vigilant, right? You have to be. And we do a contest, I think, as you know, every all hands. First thing we show their all hands is a contest.
Yeah.
A fishing contest, right?
Who reported
it the fastest. So we actually give out a prize at the beginning of every all hands. And I think this is all credit to Quirk and his team, but we do take it seriously because, yeah, it only takes one person in our company, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's part of where it goes sideways really quickly. On the board level, like how does a board of a company that's this successful look at cyber? Because a lot of boards I've talked to and done workshops with, they look at cyber as almost a problem or a cost center or something they just don't want to deal with. Like how does the board of G2 look at that, do you think?
Right. And if I'm honest, probably not enough yet.
Right.
You know, like it's not like a standard. I mean, I guess like glass half full, they like trust myself, Sarah, our leadership team that were on it. But on the flip side, and someday we do hope to ring the bell, become a public company. And then, yeah, I do. It's actually a good reminder, Chase, but I think we probably need to make it formally more part of our governance process. You know, I think a lot of people are also putting CISOs on the board now.
Yep.
Because it is. And I, after MGM, probably a lot more will. Because all of a sudden you can see billions, you know, because the reputation damage, the loyalty damage.
Yeah, they lost 24 million a day just in slots.
Right.
I think it was 24 million a day in slots and 8 million a day in like hospitality services.
Right. And that's just the upfront, right?
Yeah.
But like the brand, the trust damage is massive, right? So I do think, yes. So it's certainly something I think we, because I think a lot of our investors are more like VC earlier stage. And I think like, and I'm the same thing as an entrepreneur, like early days, you're kind of like, I'm at risk, but everything's at risk.
Yeah. All right.
And then the bigger you get, the more
you kind of hit like an inflection point,
right? Where you have to start getting serious about all dimensions of it, because all of a sudden you have a lot to lose, right? And that's the only good news as a startup, like no one cares about you at the beginning, you have nothing to lose. But then all of a sudden, now at our scale, and hopefully we keep getting bigger, right? And then all of a sudden you have a lot to lose, so we got to get a little more conscious about it.
So like last couple things, just because I like to, I call it the toilet rule. If people can listen to my podcast on the toilet, then I'm doing the right thing.
Okay.
I mean, everybody's got a thing. So
I tend to often, like, this annoys my wife. I like to I read on the toilet.
Yeah, right.
I mean, like, what are you doing? Yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm just catching up on some stuff.
I'll be out in like half
maybe
an
next
hour.
Time I'll listen to Dr. Zero Trust.
Yeah, there you go. So on the last side of it, like as the market for this gets continually bigger and G2 is looking to lean in on cyber, like where does that kind of line up, do you think? Or is it cybersecurity is the market analysis and that type of thing is a big deal for G2 in the near future, or just figuring it out as we kind of progress along with an ultimate goal on lining up and owning a lot of that market? How does that look?
Yeah. And certainly, like I said, we got to keep becoming more vigilant in our own use. But I think externally, and that's actually why I'm so excited to have you on our team, Chase.
Oh, thank you.
Because I do talk to a lot of CEOs, CMOs, and the one area I think people, even in this tech downturn, tech companies have been investing less in everything, cutting costs. But I think security has been, people are at a minimum keeping their investment level, if not growing it. Mm. So I think it has become CEO level, CFO level. Everyone's like, you certainly ever can't stop. Mm. You know, you can't. Certainly can't turn off. At the margin, you should always be investing more in security. So we're excited about it. As G2, we want to be the trusted place you go for software. But of all the categories on G2, I think security is one. Also, when we look at it with our investors, right, but the TAM, the total addressable market, it's already huge. It's only going to get bigger. So we do want to be also a thought leader. And I think what I also, I think I kind of felt like we had to hire you to get serious about it. Because honestly, it's also, it's its own world.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have your own community.
It's a total like fishbowl. It's a tribal thing.
And you have your own language, your own expertise. Honestly, my expertise has always been more CRM software. Mm-hmm. It was the first two companies I bought. First one, Oracle CPQ, now part of Oracle CRM. Second one, Salesforce CRM. So I know a lot about sales and marketing apps, but honestly, security, I'm very thin in my knowledge. And I know enough that I'm like, wow, if we don't get a real expert, a thought leader, somebody like you that's really trusted in the community, we'll never make progress. And we do have to tune our product. Yeah, that's why we also, you know, our research team is part of Sarah Rossio's broader team. But, and I'm sure, I'm really looking forward to your feedback, channeling the community's feedback. Like, how do we make G2 trusted, you know, for security? I realize the bar for that, honestly, is much higher. Like, we've made it trusted for sales and marketing software. But I think to make it truly trusted and ideally a go-to resource. Yeah. And the cool thing about G2, we want most of it available for free. That's always been our philosophy. And especially also in true security is true, right? Obviously, if you're a Fortune 500, you know, you can afford Gartner, you can afford, you know, you can hire tons of experts. But the reality is most mid-market companies, small companies, they can't afford that. They
yeah.
really don't.
They're already hired somewhere else too. Right? Yeah, yeah.
And that's where kind of part of our mission at G2 is kind of we wanted to democratize software expertise. Mm. And in security, I do think it's really important. Because small companies get hit all the time too. Like mid-market companies get hit all the time.
That's the new
and it
vector.
May not be, it may not be on the level of like MGN. It won't make the front page of Wall Street Journal. But to that small business owner, that entrepreneur, it can be catastrophic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the last
it can blow up their company.
Yeah, the last speech that I gave, literally I was in DC giving a speech about cyber. And in the back of the room, I saw this guy. He took his hand and slammed it on the table. And he stood up and he started dropping F-bombs. And he walked out of the room. And afterwards, I was like, hey, what's up? You good? And he goes, we just got hit. And like literally during the speech, he got hit for, I think it was a $375,000 ransom. And he's like, that's it. We're cooked.
Yeah.
Like, wow. your company died during a speech about cyber.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's,
yeah, that is. And I think that's hopefully at G2 as we amp up our security research, our security knowledge, and hopefully we do make a trusted place for the security community. And then, yeah, every business, right? Like not just the big ones. Can get great insights. And we think hopefully even for the big companies, the big enterprises, we can come up with an additional valuable data set. You know, so like I said, I'm just thrilled to have you. And even this call made me realize how little I know. but I'm also glad because I know you and Cork are also working together.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to make our internal security much better. And hopefully we can help the whole world, right? Help every business get smarter, get a better security infrastructure stack so that, you know, because the bad guys are upping their game, you know, with AI and everything else. So hopefully we can help everyone else protect themselves.
Yeah, I mean, number one, really thank you for jumping on my little thing here that I do. Number two, hopefully I'm still employed at the end of this, which is always good.
More than ever.
And then number three, folks, I didn't train Godard on any of this. We didn't have a long conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was very authentic.
Right?
I mean, one of our values. Yeah. You know, we have our peak values is authentic. But I'm really glad to be a part of it. Glad to learn more from all of you in the security community.
And so there you have it. Like that's a CEO of a company that's at unicorn status talking about his perspective on cyber, how the board looks at it. We touched on some other stuff. This is as honest as it gets, folks. So if you're out there, I'll put the link to G2 at the end of this. You can get your $10 Amazon gift card. It's 10 bucks you didn't have before. If nothing else, donate it to some kid at school because they'll use the $10. That's what I think anyway. As always, stay smart, stay safe, stay secure. I'll catch you on the next one. Godard, thanks for jumping in.
Yeah, great to be here with you all. Thank you.
Disclaimer, the information in this podcast episode, aka episode, is provided for general information purposes only. By listening to this episode, you understand that this is not specific technical guidance from the host. No information contained in this episode should be construed as security advice from the author, host, or guest, nor is it intended to be a substitute for security advice on any particular subject matter. No listener of this episode should act or refrain from acting on the basis of any information included in or accessible through this episode without seeking the appropriate technical or other professional advice on the particular facts and circumstances that are discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only. All views expressed therein are those of the host and his guest and should not be considered as being endorsed by nor related to the host or the guest's employers.